We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Your podcast home of the Utah State Aggies. This is another edition of the Aggies All the Way podcast with Scott Girard from Learfield IMG College.
It's another edition of the Aggies All the Way podcast. I'm Scott Girard. Welcome on into another episode. And again, it's been a few podcasts since we've mentioned this, but cannot thank all of you enough for listening, for downloading, for subscribing, for leaving comments. We appreciate all of it. If you are new to the podcast, first off, where have you been? Second of all, we would love any kind of feedback. You can reach us at any time at Aggie Voice. That's the official Twitter account of the Utah State broadcast from Learfield IMG College. And let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to see more of. We'd love to hear as much of that as possible. Also, if you're on iTunes or Spotify, please subscribe. Please give us a rating. Please leave us any kind of feedback there. We'd be really appreciative of that. So, a lot to get to on the program today. We're going to talk to Kevin White, the color analyst of the Utah State Aggies. He hangs out with me. We had our first year together last year. He is awesome, does a tremendous job, and has been a huge addition to the broadcast. And look forward to working with him again this year. So we started doing a little bit of a Q&A. And earlier today, I sent out a few tweets asking for some questions that you would like Kevin and I to ask. We'll make that a regular thing throughout the football season. So if you missed out on it this time, we'll do it again here very, very soon. But here's my conversation with Kevin White, color analyst and former Aggie quarterback for the Utah State broadcast, with your questions on the Aggies All the Way podcast from Learfield IMG College. You and I kept a close eye on this team in spring. Overall, what are your thoughts going into this season with, a lot of changes, especially on the offensive side?
Certainly a lot of changes, and a lot of people are asking questions also the wide receiver group. But what I see coming back is, I'm excited because you've got a lot of young guys that, you know, as a result of a lot of blowouts last year, got a lot of playing time, especially up front. When you look at guys like Andy Koch, and you look at Wade Meacham, and you look at some of those guys, and then you've got Alfred Edwards coming back. He played over 650 snaps a year ago, and Mick Aliafua will step in at the center position. So I'm not as worried about the offensive line as a lot of people might think. The wide receiver crew, that's the one that is really interesting to me. As you look at COC Mariner coming in, and you look at guys like Savon Scarver, who's going to need to take a step forward to this year, I think. I'm excited to watch what happens. And, of course, you've got really an All-American and a potential, in my mind, a first-round draft choice pulling the trigger in Jordan Love. It should be a lot of fun on that offensive side of the football.
Yeah, no doubt, too. And I think defensively is where things could really get fun, because you look at, obviously, a All-American linebacker in David Woodward. You got Tiffin Aliai coming around the edge. I like the front seven overall for Utah State. And, you know, the secondary is going to be interesting development with DJ Williams. I think he has a chance to be certainly really special. But I look at a guy, and I've heard this name over and over and over, is Troy Leffridge. And I'd say if you're an Aggie fan, you need to keep an eye on him, because I know the coaches are really excited about him.
You know, a junior college transfer coming in, I think you're right. I mean, you know, I'm curious to see how Shaq Bond returns from his injury, and Jamarcus Ingram from his injury. But yeah, Leffridge really took a step forward in spring, and you know, is going to be called upon at that free safety position to replace Gage Ferguson, who was so good in that spot, kind of leading that defensive secondary. He'll be out there making a lot of calls, but you know, getting some of those guys back, including Ingram and including Shaq Bond, and then of course, as you called it, DJ Williams. I think DJ, playing probably more of that nickel spot this year, has got a chance to be an all-conference type of performer. So I think they're going to be actually better than a lot of people might think. And you're right. If they can get the kind of pressure that Coach Anderson and Coach Anna are famous for up front, and you've got a guy in Tiffin Aliai who's going to be one of the best coming off the edge, and if they can get some pressure, I expect to see another big-time year in terms of a turnovers cost. I think they had close to 30 a year ago. They may not reach that mark, but they'll be ball hawking, and certainly they're going to be after it for sure.
So let's get to some questions. Earlier in the day, I asked people to submit some questions for you and I, and let's get some thoughts here. Let's start with, Sam McConkey with the first question, saying, what will USU's surprise position group be this season? Which unit is stronger than people think? Are you going O-line on that one?
I think so. For me, when you look at guys like Andy Koch, who Mike Sanford, the offensive coordinator, told me in the spring that he's as good as any offensive tackle at this point in his young career. He'll be, you know, as a redshirt freshman. He had close to 70 snaps a year ago and still was able to preserve his redshirt year. He said he's as good as any offensive lineman he saw at Stanford. And that's saying a lot. And so when you see guys like Koch, you got Alfred Edwards, you got Ty Shaw, you got Carter Shaw, you got Mick Aliafua, Kyler Hack, who I think has got a chance to be very, very good at one of the tackle positions, and Jacob South, who got a lot of run at the right tackle position a year ago, and then of course you've got Hanelli Avendano, who got a lot of play as well. So you know, you got a little bit more experience there than what you might think, and then you've got Mo Waske, who's been moved over from the defensive line to the offensive line. And so you've got some depth that's starting to build. And as a matter of fact, we wondered if they would go out and recruit at the junior college level to help bring in some replacements for guys like Quinn Ficklin and Sean Taylor and Roman Andrus and Rob Castaneda, who they lost as starters off of that offensive line. But they really like the guys they've got coming back. And I think they're very comfortable with their ability to really kick off the season with the group that they have. And I suspect that they will be pretty strong out of the gate.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. And I think that, look, you've got a lot of great coaches here. Gary Anderson knows offensive line. The guy was a former offensive lineman. You got TJ Wood, who is as good of an offensive line coach as you can find. You got Mike Sanford, who's a tremendous offensive mind. And when you have collectively those three individuals say, and I think you bring it up, and I know we've talked about this before, the fact that they're like, hey, we don't need a quick fix here. We don't need to jump the gun and go the JC route. We like what we've got. Let's recruit freshmen. Let's develop them. Let's develop the guys we got here. And look, there were a lot of benefits of the blowouts last year. A lot of those benefits were the fact that these guys got a lot of second half action, and they were able to preserve redshirt years and play three or four games last year and still preserve the redshirt because of a lot of blowouts last year. So that's one of the benefits that they were able to experience last year with some of those high scoring games. So I'm with you on that one. Offensive line for sure.
I like the model, Scotty. Yeah, I like the model of getting them in, getting them redshirting, bulking them up. I mean, Andy Koch has gone from a 6'6", 250-pound raw freshman to now close to 290, you know, 6'6", and with a long reach, and strong hands, I got a sense that he might be really special. And when you got he and Alfred Edwards manning the edges, that's got to make Jordan Love feel pretty comfortable out there that, you know, he's going to have whatever time he might need to find his receivers down the field. So I'm actually really excited to see how that group gels and comes together and how they come out starting the season at Wake Forest.
Another Sam tweets in, Sam Briner says, in terms of wins and losses in relation to the schedule, what would a poor, average, and great season look like this year? I think you look at that, the schedule's obviously much more difficult than it was last year with Wake Forest and LSU on the docket, both on the road. You do get BYU at home, and then you look at the fact that you replace San Jose State, UNLV, and Hawaii with essentially Nevada, Fresno State, and San Diego State. So the schedule ramped up and is far more difficult. There's no doubt about it. I still, though, with that schedule, I think a good season is a 7-8 win season. A great season with that schedule is a 9-10 win season. And I think you're going to have to really catch fire, but I don't think there's any reason why you can't be in that 8-9 range.
When you and I talked a couple of months ago on your show, I predicted 9-3. I think they can win at Wake Forest. I really do.
I do too.
I think the tough games in my mind, certainly LSU will be a juggernaut. But when you look at San Diego, having to go to San Diego State, where Utah State has not won in San Diego in their history, and you know, it'd be great to break that streak this year. It's early in the season, so it's game three, and so I'm curious to see how that will play out, and that will come out after a bye week. So, you know, they'll have 2 weeks to prepare for that one, which I actually kind of like in the schedule. But you've got to go to Fresno as well, and then you've got BYU and Boise State at home. And so when you look at that, of course, you'll have much improved Wyoming, and you'll have much improved Colorado State, and then Nevada coming into Maverick. I still, when I look at it, I still think it's a 9-3 team. And I think it's a team that competes along with Boise State and Wyoming, most likely for that Mountain West Mountain Division title. I think an average season, like you said, I think is more 7-5. And I think a poor season, if they do not qualify for a bowl game, I think it'll be considered a poor season. So in my mind, though, I think that they are poised with the position strength that they have coming back at some of the key positions, including quarterback. You know, when you got that guy pulling the string and leading your offense, I think you've got a chance to write some early miscues, because he'll get you in and out of plays that will make sure that you're successful. And I think he's got a chance to win a game at Wake Forest, and I think he's got a chance to perhaps pull an upset at San Diego State. So if they can start 3-0 with that group, and possibly 4-0 with Colorado State coming in to Maverick in game four, going into LSU at 4-0 would be, wow, wouldn't that be something setting up that game?
Yeah. Were you part of any teams that went to LSU back in the day?
I was not.
Okay.
No, I think they went in 93 and again in 2001.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I'm a little older than that, Scotty. I apologize.
Stop it. All right. T. Wade with a tweet here. And I think this is interesting. And I'm going to let you handle this one, because I know you and Coach Stanford have had a lot of conversations. Says last year the offense was essentially 50-50 with passing and rushing attempts. And you know what's interesting? He broke it down, and I'd forgotten how close this was. They were 465 passes to 467 rushes. How's that for a run to pass ratio? Said, do you expect a similar approach, or will we lean on Jordan's arm a little bit more and let the young O-line do more grinding in the run game?
Good question. You know, and part of that has to do with the running game and the running backs coming back. And that'll be an interesting group. Of course, you've got Gerald Bright, who rushed for almost 900 yards a year ago, but then your backup or your backups, who are those guys going to be? You've got Riley Burt coming in as a graduate transfer from BYU, and you've got, you know, Enoch Nawahini, who's a freshman, came and had a really good spring. And then, of course, the junior college transfer from Snow College, Jalen Warren, who rushed for almost 1,500 yards and 15 touchdowns at Snow College a year ago. I think that they're probably going to lean on Jordan early. Now, of course, he's really been good as he's learned the offense and as he's evolved in his ability to read the defense at the line of scrimmage, of getting in and out of plays as necessary, depending on the defensive alignment. I remember the BYU game last year where the BYU strategy was to really walk the defensive ends and linebackers off of the line of scrimmage and into that sort of inside passing lane for the slot receivers And so Jordan consistently audible to the running game. And of course, you had Darwin Thompson, who was a freak of nature running for you. But I really think that's a good question that early on, you'll probably see a little bit more of Jordan Love throwing to Savon Scarver and Taylor Compton and to Jordan Nathan and to his tight ends, Carson Terrell and Caleb Rep and a few others that are going to be out there. I think you'll see him really try to dial that up and try to preserve Gerald Bright a little bit, who's a little bit smaller, doesn't quite have the strength that Darwin Thompson had. And so you want to preserve him and not chew him up as you're developing your depth at running back with Burt and Nawahine and also Jaylen Warren. So I really think in answer to the question, you're probably going to see a little bit more of Jordan Love early on.
I'm glad you brought up Gerald Bright, because in Darwin Thompson, trust me, deserves all the accolades that he got. Tremendous runner. But I think if you go back and you look at the carries, Gerald Bright and Darwin Thompson were nearly 50-50 in carries per game. Now, Darwin got him a little bit in yards, but he wasn't that too, Gerald Bright wasn't that too far behind. I mean, 888 yards on the season, 10 touchdowns, just a tremendous player overall. So I know we're all going to miss Darwin and wish him nothing but the best in Kansas City, but Gerald Bright, tremendous player. And I think Utah State's going to be pretty good in the running game.
Well, and he's so versatile. As you recall, he played wide receiver when he first got to Utah State. And, he had 23 catches, I believe it was, a year ago. And I'll never forget the 88-yard screen ball he took to the house at Boise State towards the end of that ball game. You know, he's so electric with the football, but he's probably not your in-between-the-tackles grinder like Darwin Thompson was. And so can Jaylen Warren be that guy? Can Riley Burt be that guy that can help spell Gerald Bright in the running game and create that sort of 1-2 or 1-2-3 punch? It'll be curious to see how Coach Sanford uses those guys and see if he tries to develop a 1-2 punch like he had with Darwin and Gerald last year. If Burt becomes that guy or if Warren becomes that guy or Nawahine becomes that guy. They may be running back by committee after Gerald Bright this year, but make no mistake, I think Gerald will be the bell cow.
And that's something, too, that Gary Anderson's been pretty upfront and honest about, that he wants to see a little bit more diversity in his running game, because when he finally got things rolling at Utah State, I mean, he had Michael Smith, he had Robert Turbin and Kerwin Williams. I mean, that's one heck of a three-headed monster right there. And I think that's something that they aspire to be, where they can split up some carries and you can get hit with multiple different running backs with multiple different skill sets at any given different time throughout the course of the season. So it's going to be an interesting landscape there. Another question here rolling in, and it goes back to the wide receivers. Who do you anticipate emerging as one of the two or three or one or two best wide receivers on the team this year?
You know, they lost close to 2,700 yards and 20 some odd touchdowns from a year ago. And so that's really been the question mark. In my mind, I think you're right. Savon, there's two guys in my mind that have got to step forward. Savon has got to step forward. And he's been a bit of an enigma in the receiving game. He's so dynamic, as you mentioned, in the return game. Matter of fact, he's an All-American last year and projected, again, All-American this year. The second guy that's got to step forward, in my mind, has got to be Devin Tompkins, the speedster from Florida, who caught 9 balls a year ago. And I think he's going to be a guy that perhaps in the punt return game as well as in the receiving game, he's probably going to be in the slot along with Jordan Nathan. And Jordan Nathan is going to be a returning leader in that unit. But you've got guys that can also come in and really help you out, like Carson Terrell at the tight end position and Taylor Compton at that wide receiver position that are going to help you out. But then they're going to have a couple of new guys that are coming in. And how will COC Mariner factor into this? That is really the third piece behind Savon Scarver and Devin Tompkins, is how will they integrate COC Mariner into the mix at that wide receiver position? So I think, he'll probably play on the outside, and you'll have Mariner and Taylor Compton, and you'll have Tompkins and Jordan Nathan on the inside. It will really be interesting to see how guys like Tim Patrick Jr. and others that have not seen a lot of playing time, if they'll be able to emerge, or if some of the young guys that they've recruited, like C.J. Carter and Sean Carter. Sean Carter, a junior college transfer, may be a guy that starts to see some time, much like Jalen Green did a year ago. So that's the one position that I think, while there's a lot of talent there is still a little bit untested. And it will be interesting to see how they incorporate that group and utilize that group, especially early in the season as they're trying to establish that offensive line.
Yep, no doubt. You'll like this one. What was, gentlemen, love the broadcast. What was your favorite broadcast moment last year? First year as a broadcast crew. Your favorite moment last year. You want me to go first?
You go first. Yeah, you go first on this one. Let's see if it might be similar.
Oh, see, this one just barely came in. I would have to say the BYU game was an absolute blast, but I might say Colorado State, which kind of as far as the most exciting moment, there's no doubt, and the weird range of emotions in that game. You know, it looks like you're going to lose, and then you come back and you hit Aaron Vaughns with a big pass play, and then you're going to win, and then it looks like you're going to lose again, and then all of a sudden, nope, you've won. I'm a little hesitant to say it because I think I screwed up the call on so many big calls in that game and was way too emotional and probably should have kept my cool a little bit more and probably not said a four-letter word on the broadcast that my mom's still a little grumpy about. But, you know, just for the overall fun and emotional nature of the game, I probably would say Colorado State.
So I had two, and they're the same ones. That ending to the Colorado State game, I botched it up too. I went back and listened to it, and I think I said, oh my goodness, seven times as I was trying to figure out along with you, because we never did see the official throwing
no,
pass.
No, never did.
And so we didn't find out until the officials made the call, and your call will go down in Aggie lore, Scotty. That four-letter word will go down in Aggie lore as one of the all-time great calls. As a matter of fact, you made the ESPN top 10 list that night. So that was really fun. And, of course, it was such an emotional way to end that game. But for me, the highlight had to be BYU.
Yeah.
And probably the highlight of that broadcast was Quinn Ficklin for me. When he as we did the post game with Quinn, and he came out afterwards and he took a chunk out of the Y in the middle of the field at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, and he called Lavelle Edwards Stadium the Third Temple in Provo. And it was just such a fun night, and to see Utah State completely dominate that game told me that perhaps the change in recruiting and the change in talent level had shifted to Logan from Provo, and that's two in a row for Utah State over BYU, and with a third coming up perhaps this fall in Logan. So that for me probably was my greatest highlight, having grown up in Logan and having, you know, participated in that rivalry for 50 years. That was a highlight for me.
The game you're looking forward to the most this season?
Oh, good question. Good question. Of course, everybody would say LSU.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Broadcasting a game in that stadium is something that I know you and I are both really fired up about and excited about. For me, I watched the other day, and it was the first time I've ever actually watched it from start to finish. I went back, and it was on the DVR, and I watched the Boise State game. I just, you know, I'd forgotten how many opportunities there was to win that game. And Boise, you know, Utah State got off such a great start in that game, and they looking like they were ready to roll. And, you know, Boise reels them back in and then ends up taking the lead. And then Utah State keeps it close. And then after that, you mentioned that 88-yard screenplay for a touchdown. All you need is a three and out, and a field goal is going to win that game. And unable to get off the field, you give up that late touchdown. I really look forward to that matchup against Boise State and Logan. And hopefully, there is a lot on the line for that game, because I'm sure there's a lot of guys on this team that want another whack at Boise.
I agree with you, and I wish that game was the last game of the season.
I do too,
You have to go to New Mexico after that game. But there's likely to be a lot riding on that game. I'll give you another one that I'm really looking forward to, and that is the trip to San Diego against San Diego State. That'll be the opening conference ball game. Utah State has never won in San Diego. San Diego State leads that series 12-1. This could be the year that Utah State breaks through in San Diego, and it will be really a lot riding on that game, because it is the opening game of the conference season, and it is a huge game at San Diego State. And so that one's one that I've kind of circled on my map to look for as a key early indicator of what kind of season this will be for Utah State. So I think there's a handful of games in there. Obviously, the BYU game at first weekend in November will be a great one at Maverick Stadium. that Boise game, as you mentioned. Really excited to see Wyoming and Colorado State come to Maverick this year as well.
Yeah.
So all up and down, it should be a great, great schedule. Got to go to Air Force, and you got Nevada coming in. So should be a lot of good football games in Maverick Stadium. And then, of course, Wake Forest and LSU and San Diego State and Fresno and New Mexico all on the road in Air Force. But that San Diego State game is one that I've got circled.
Another question rolling in here from Doug. Looking at the offensive line and comparing it to other lines, we've talked a lot about the offensive line. He said, I remember the 2017 team that had much less experience than the current line. And I think that's a good comparison. The 2017 offensive line, they opened up at Wisconsin that year, as you remember, Kevin, and nobody on that starting offensive line, Quinn Ficklin included, had a starting rep as an offensive lineman at Utah State University. They all played their very first snap together at Wisconsin. And I thought for the most part, now things got away from them in the second half, but I think for the most part, they had a really good season. There were some ups and downs, and there were a couple of games where they got bullied, but for the most part, I thought they came together pretty well in 2017. I think right now, in as far as where they're at to start a season, this year's offensive line is far, far better than that offensive line. So I'm with you. Just to reiterate maybe some of the things that we talked about, I'm not concerned about the offensive line, but I'm not hitting the panic button like a lot of Aggie fans are about the offensive line.
Well, it's an interesting comparison because how good did that line become last year?
Oh yeah. It just took a year to get playing at that higher level. Yeah,
it did. But this group coming in now had enough experience. When you look at the number of snaps that each of these young guys had because of the blowouts a year ago, they played at least 1 to 2 full games, each of them, even though most of them got their redshirt year. And so, and of course, you've got Alfred Edwards and Mick Aliafua that played. I mean, they were, Aliafua, for all intents and purposes, was a sixth starter on that offensive line a year ago. So you really have two returning starters there. I just think they're going to be really good. And as they gel, I think it'll be important for them at Wake Forest. They're going to have to lean on Jordan Love at Wake Forest, I think, to help them get in and out of things and you know, help them be successful. Stony Brook should be a victory at that opening game at Maverick Stadium. And you get some confidence coming out of those two games with that group, and you start, you know, jumping into the Mountain West Conference season, they got a chance to be pretty special.
Yeah.
And I think they're actually much further ahead than that 2017 group. And, oh, by the way, all of them are young. They're going to be around for another 3 years.
Yeah.
And wow, how good can they become over the next couple of years? So watch for that group to be really special.
Well, Kevin, appreciate it as always. This can be a lot of fun. We will do this again, I'm sure, a couple times before the start of the season. And then if you're okay with it, we'll do it once a week throughout the course of the year.
I look forward to it, Scotty. I'd like to go for another hour or two if we could, but let's keep it going. I cannot wait for August 30th to get here.
As of tomorrow. So actually, no, today's Thursday. Yeah, so when we post this, it'll probably get posted tomorrow, which will be Friday. It will be exactly 6 weeks until game day, and it will be here before you know it.
Go Aggies.
So again, big thanks to Kevin White for joining us on our first ever Q&A podcast, where we take your questions and answer them. I know a couple of them came later on after we recorded this podcast, so we'll try to work those into our next podcast. Hey, remember, we've got Mountain West Conference Media Day coming up next week. So we will be in Vegas on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, and we will have complete coverage, and I will post all the sound up on the podcast. So get ready. If you've subscribed to us, your feed is going to get inundated with a lot of Mountain West Conference sound. We'll be able to chat with all the head coaches, a lot of the key players in the Mountain West Conference. Utah State is bringing Teepan Naliai and Jordan Love to the Mountain West Conference Media Day. You always bring one offensive player and one defensive player. So that's who's representing Utah State, as well as, of course, Gary Anderson. So we'll have all that content for you. And again, feel free to subscribe, and then you can get all of that sound sent directly to your phone or however you're subscribing to us these days. Also, coming down the pipeline here very soon, we'll continue our preview series. Brian Roth, who is the play-by-play analyst for the Colorado State Rams, we will record a conversation with him tomorrow and have that posted up very shortly too. So we'll continue on with our preview series as well as getting ready for start of the season. In fact, we record this on a Thursday. It'll probably get posted on Friday, and that Friday will mark the 6-week mark until the start of the regular season. Only 6 weeks until we're hanging out at Wake Forest with a little Utah State football. Can't wait. I'm Scott Girard. Thanks for listening on the Aggies All the Way podcast from Learfield IMG College.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.